Hello, welcome to the Snap UK Super Divisional Round Recap Podcast. So we're all here this week, got a full house, but Gilo, Fourth and Inches, Jimmy G, Griff and myself. And we've got, so we'll go into the game, so we'll cover news in the second half. So we'll just go through it in order. So first was the Rams 18, Packers 32. Packers were,
good.
You know, very good, really. Yeah. You know, Rams still, defensively, they were fine. Offensively, they were not. They were what we expect the Rams to be at the moment, really. Yeah, what do you guys think of this one? Because the Packers march on.
I think there's always questions after the teams come off the bye, isn't there? You know, have they rested well? Have they missed out on some game time? But this Packers team, you know, they were 13-3 last season and 13-3 this season, but they are so different. The teams are just worlds apart, you know, in terms of the balance they have on both sides of the ball, you know, and the running game. You know, they've got Aaron Jones, but then there's other people also contributing this year as well. And I don't know, I watched an interview with Aaron Rodgers yesterday, and he just looks like a different person. He looks about 5 years younger. He looks happy. He looks engaged. You know, he feels, you know, he said he feels privileged to be leading the guys. It's almost like he's bought into everything that Matt LaFleur is trying to do. And that has just been enough. He clearly buys into the responsibility he has with this offense. And they're just a different team to last year. 2 13-3 teams. But, you know, this one, you struggle to pick fault in. And last year, we were like, they're only 13-3 because they're in a bad division and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't think you can be anything other than impressed, really.
Yeah. Sure. I take umbrage of your point, Johnny, that the LA Rams defense was good. They gave up 484 yards on Saturday, and that's the first time they've given up more than 400 yards this season. They looked like, against Seattle, they looked dominant. Like they looked like they were getting to Russell Wilson more or less every single play. They stuffed the run up. The cornerbacks played well. You just didn't see any of that from on Saturday against the Packers. Now, some of that is obviously down to the fact that Aaron Donald wasn't 100% fit. He was only used sparingly. The other players didn't raise their game. But I think it says a heck of a lot for the Packers offensive line. I think we were chatting on WhatsApp and I was chatting on Twitter as well. And I think the general consensus is that that offensive line is the best line in football at the moment. You look at Rodgers' post-game interview, like right after the game, his sleeves are crystal white. There is not a mark on him. His kit is, he might as well just walked out the locker room. Missing Aaron Donald really suffered, but I don't think anyone on the Rams team really kind of played up their potential. The scoreline 32-18, I think, flatters the Rams. Like, I think it should have been 32-3. That would have been a fair reflection on the production of the Rams.
I mean, I can't say anything else. Yeah, it was just a game too far for the Rams. You know, they aren't.
Yeah.
They feel like a team that's about to transition. I feel.
Yeah,
and actually, you know, the rumors that the Goff and McVay aren't particularly getting on at the moment seems.
And his interview both after the match, but also on the Sunday, the day after the game, like there were lots of questions from the press around like, is Goff going to be the quarterback next year? Is Goff your man? And normally, I mean, we've seen Shanahan do it with Garoppolo and saying, right, no, he's our quarterback in 2021. Like Sean McVay went completely the other way. It's like, we're evaluating everyone. We're looking at everyone's performance and we'll make those decisions And that's not the kind of thing you'd expect to hear from a coach who's got a franchise quarterback. And I think there are question marks about Goff in that building. And I think if the Rams had a first-round pick this year, which they haven't because they gave it up for Jalen Ramsey last year, I think they'd be seriously considering a quarterback at the back end of the draft to replace Goff, because although he played quite well on Saturday, you know, 21 or 27 passes, but only 174 yards, six and a half yards average per attempt. It's like they never looked like really scoring unless it's Cam Akers who had another really good game.
They do have somebody on their depth chart, the Rams, who has won a divisional round game and could, you know, I'm not even going to say could be an option because I feel sick saying it, but I think, yeah, the draft class that's coming in does have quite a lot of QB options, doesn't it?
So it does, yeah.
I don't think it's even that, is it? It's just so much out there, you know. There's loads out there, isn't there? Okay. Yeah, James has got to end up somewhere.
Mariota, you know, is another year, but looking at another year behind Carr, you know, there's players out there, you know.
I think Goff lacks energy. You know, you can see that McVay feeds off energy, doesn't he? You know, he's full of energy. He's just bouncing everywhere, and Goff is very balanced, you know, and he's very kind of calm, but he lacks kind of real spark and leadership and those moments of energy. You don't really get a buzz off him, do you?
He's not exciting. He's functional.
Exactly. And I don't think that's what McVay wants. I think he quite enjoyed having the other guy. What was his name?
John Wolford.
Yeah, I think he enjoyed it. I think he enjoyed seeing a quarterback that could make plays with his feet better. That could really mix up his offense. And I think, you know, if I'm honest with you, I just don't know how the future is going to look for. I'm sure if you're outstanding at staying in the pocket and being a great pocket passer, there is a career for you in the NFL. But I don't think it's what any team is looking for anymore.
No, I completely agree with that. You're looking at, I mean, I'm sure, like McVay, he's known for being an offensive genius. And I think that reputation has probably been tarnished over the last couple of years. Just because, like, since that Super Bowl run, the Rams haven't been, they're not the same team on offense. I think they're as good at the moment on defense, but on offense, they're lackluster. I think you're right. They're lacking a spark. And, you know, Goff is getting paid something like $25 million. I mean, his guarantee, well, his cap number for 2021 is going to be $34 million, $34.6 million.
Drops down after next year, doesn't it?
It does, but it's still good for next year. And they're going to be $22 million over the cap going into 2021. So there's going to be some really hard decisions to make about that team because there's no cap space. They're going to have free agency. They need to sign. They haven't got a massive amount of like premium draft picks. I just wonder what's the plan for the Rams. I don't think they had
a plan. I think the plan was win the Super Bowl against the Patriots and everything will be fine. It just seemed everything was planned for that year and kind of a little bit like I feel it is with Tampa Bay now. It's win now and forget later.
Yeah, I think there's a two-year window.
We talk about cap space quite a lot, but, you know, teams, you know, we've seen it, the Patriots, etc. Teams are very adept at managing cap numbers. They really are. And I know $22 million is a lot of overage, but they can get that under. Whether they can afford to go and change their quarterback for a quality quarterback is another question.
Well, yeah, that's because that's the biggest question, whether you can get a quality quarterback in there and still be able to pay. If you're going to cut Jared Goff, you've still got to pay him a heck of a lot of money. They need to find a trade partner, realistically. And the other issue is that the cap's probably going to stay the same, if not go down next year. It's like the first year that it won't go up because of everything that's happened with COVID. There's going to have to be some very creative accountancy done, and it's almost worth paying some. If you've got a guy in charge of the cap who's brilliant at managing the cap, it's almost worth doubling his salary to make sure you come up in under it.
Yeah, one of the guys who did really well, I thought, played the Woody all this weekend was Leonard Floyd, and he's out of contract. So
yeah,
he's only signed a short term deal. You know, there's a lot of average players earning a lot of money at the Rams. And of course, they're still paying Todd Gurley. So,
so before we move on from the Rams, are we saying that Jared Goff or Carson Wentz is most likely to not be playing for their current team next season?
I think Goff.
Carson Wentz.
At the moment.
Well, I think because the Eagles have an option.
I think Wentz. I think Goff will be in a battle with John Wolford in camp, and then you may see them move on after that. But I think he's done enough previously to earn a bad year. Wentz has never been the same. Got injured. Goff's had a bad season, but yes, I think
he's done. The divisional round of the playoffs. I'm a Giants fan. I haven't been there for 5 years.
I don't think Goff's been that great though. Like he, even in the Super Bowl run. And last year and the year before, they didn't get to the Super Bowl because of Goff.
No,
like I think
he's a game
the year that the Eagles got to the Super Bowl, they got to the playoffs largely off of Carson Wentz's playing ability that season. He was brilliant, and he was, you know, odds-on favorite for an MVP before he ripped his leg up. No one's ever said that about Goff, that he's an amazing quarterback. They said, he gets the job done. Game manager.
Well, I think they both stay where they are now.
I do as well.
I think both stay where they are. I think, you know, if they can draft or if they can get a veteran, someone in the league for a reasonable price to have three competitive quarterbacks on that roster, that's what they'll try and do. So whether they can do that, I don't know.
Bortles is already there and they clearly like Wolford.
Well, they didn't even act. They didn't even act.
It's a quarterback battle to one of those two. Then he'll move. But other than that,
but from the question,
I can't see all the money they've got that they'll get someone guaranteed to be better.
I don't think it's as simple as then he'll move though, because you know money does matter, and also the players don't have anywhere near as much power in the NFL as they do in some sports. They have power. Don't get me wrong, but.
Starting. Watch the Deshaun Watson thing. It's starting.
There's other things to consider with this, because next season they could have fans again. You could have lots of fans and you could have tickets to sell. John Wolford ain't going to sell tickets.
Yeah,
he is if he's
working. Jared Goff.
Jared Goff is going to sell more tickets than John Wolford. Jalen Hurts is going to sell more tickets than Carson Wentz to me.
We'll see. They've got bigger problems.
I think in LA, Justin Herbert might sell some tickets.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, Andy Dalton's a free agent next year.
In LA, they like winners, and that's what they go for. And neither of the teams are winning.
LA, they like avocados and hummus.
No, but I'm saying, like,
are you saying bring in Brady?
Bit late for that.
Yeah, but no, I'm just saying that they like winners. You know, they will go watch the Lakers when they're winning. They'll whatever it is, it's all to do with you get the fans when they win. And the Rams were so close. They're not winning. So I think you could have, unless you've got Brady or Rodgers, I don't think it matters who is under center, they ain't selling tickets.
So what you're saying is they should sign Ryan Fitzpatrick.
Yes.
Tickets.
He money. Looks so LA. He would, in his shirt with his chest hair out. That is pure LA.
In all fairness, if you asked Sean McVay right now, who do you want, Fitzmagic or Goff, he's taking Fitzmagic every day of the week.
Yeah, because I think he would
throw away, he will pull off those plays that you want.
Do you know what? I didn't bring up his names. I didn't want to encourage Griff on this. I was waiting for Griff to suggest that they should go out and get Fitzmagic.
I was like, there is no way
Fitzpatrick is signing in New England.
I was like, if we just don't mention it, it won't come up.
We're the only club he hasn't played for.
He needs you to complete the set.
There's a reason for that. He gives the ball away too often. There's no way Belichick is going for someone like Fitzpatrick.
Why not get a choice, mate?
So well, anyway,
a lot of rumours about Fat Mac Jones being what the Patriots are considering.
Yeah, but he's not going to be ready to start. He really isn't.
He's done an all right job starting for Alabama.
Yeah, because he's got all of the college talent around him. We've got nothing. Us five are starting on the O-line next year for us.
Is that all the talent that's going to Miami in the draft?
Yeah.
Oh, you know, you've got summer now for Edelman to void up.
How did we get onto New England? We talk about Aaron Rodgers and how fucking brilliant.
Yeah, but we talk about Aaron Rodgers having his best chance to win a second Super Bowl before his career
is over. Absolutely, yeah.
This is it right now.
Oh, yeah.
I mean,
like that team is playing, like Gary said, the team's playing well on offense. It's playing well on defense as well. And I know they weren't severely tested on Saturday night, but they got the job done. They looked a lot better than the Rams' defense. I think when you compare the two of them, like at least the Packers were getting to Jared Goff. They were disrupting him, and I think the defensive backfield of the Packers is really good. I mean, they've invested in lots of young talent there over the last couple of years. I think, you know, Jair Alexander, he's one of the best cornerbacks in football at the moment. I really love Darnell Savage as well, the safety, and there's other players around them which can just fill in and complete the set. I think even the pass rush was brilliant. Like Rashawn Gary, he's getting better. He's not had the and Gary's nodding because he just likes him because he's called the same name. But he's been getting better over the last couple of years. Towards the end of this year, he's starting to look like the player that Michigan had a couple of years back. Like he's starting to look like a first round player. I still would be concerned about the run defense for the Packers. I don't think they're going to be troubled too much by the Buccaneers. Spoiler alert. But, you know, it's something I think they'll need to consider. They'll need to game plan for it moving forward. But Rodgers is just brilliant. He's just playing brilliantly. I wasn't a massive Rodgers fan, but Gary's kind of hit the nail on the head. He's completely turned his attitude around. And now he's just a joy to watch. He's not moaning at receivers who drop balls, and a lot of them do. He's just getting on with it, and he's getting the job done. And if he doesn't win the MVP this year, it's an absolute disgrace.
I think they did very well in Green Bay just in terms of keeping the faith. They lost the championship game last year and they didn't go on this massive rebuild. They didn't change the plan. They didn't change what they needed to do. They just worked on doing what they did better, and it's showing. It really is.
Plan A, but better.
Yes. Yeah. Pretty much.
Yeah. No, yeah. They're brilliant. They're a brilliant team. Yeah. And you say, you know, we're Aaron Jones, you know, contract year for him as well. But he's got Jamal Williams, AJ Dillon is coming into, he's coming more and more into the offense. And yeah, so
for about 200 yards, didn't they, at the weekend across the three players?
Yeah, 188.
And we mentioned it on our sister the YouTube thing. The difference between the receivers this year and last year is they aren't dropping. You know, Valdez Scantling and Lazard are, you know, they're making plays. It seems to, you know, I think the gloves have got better. It must be because I don't
Stickum.
It's Stickum, yeah. You know, if in a world where, you know, Valdez Scantling, Aguilar and Robbie Anderson are catching balls, there's something up. It's something up. I don't get it.
Before you move on from this game, Devontae Adams was the first regular season touchdown catching leader to score in a postseason touchdown since who?
Randy
Moss. Julio, 2016.
Any more for any more?
Randy Moss, 2011.
It was Jordy Nelson, 2016. Who remembers when Jordy Nelson was good?
Me.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, and Randall Cobb.
Yeah.
He had Cobb and Nelson, didn't he?
He did.
Well, yeah, well, should we move on? Because let's go to the Ravens 3, Bills 17. Me, did you get this? Did you predict the Ravens as well, Gary?
I can't even remember.
Like, you did.
Yeah,
I did go
It was a rhetorical question. Before we dive into this and talk about how good Buffalo were, I don't want anybody to say that Lamar can't get over the hump. He's just been into the divisional round again. He's 3 years into his career. This wasn't on Lamar, so let's just not. That's not the narrative for this next 10 minutes.
It wasn't on Lamar, but there is so many issues. Like, there is issues around his ability to pass the ball. And if you close down the edge and stop him and the run game and make him throw the ball, there is a problem there. And that might be a wide receiver problem, you know, but there is an issue there.
Marquise Brown is a number two receiver on current form, and everybody else is Willie Snead. So I just don't want to hear it. I thought Lamar was really, really good, and if he hadn't got knocked out, it probably would have been a closer game.
You do have Mark Andrews as well, though, don't you? And one of the best defenses in the league.
Yes.
I know he got knocked out, but Hundley threw the ball better than Lamar did for weeks.
There's no game film on Tyler Huntley, though, is there? Nobody's game planning for Tyler Huntley.
But his arm threw the ball better than Lamar's does.
Look at Lamar's touchdowns this season. He's been fine throwing the ball. His arm is not a problem. His accuracy will never be the best. But look, he's just got to the divisional round again. Like, he's having a great start to his career. I just think every other podcast I've heard is, Lamar's not going to get over this hump. Come on now.
I don't know it's Lamar as much as the play calling. And I think Marquise Brown called this out at the end of the game, and he said, like, we need to diversify our game plan because, yeah, Lamar Jackson, he's not the premier passer that, you know, Patrick Mahomes or Drew Brees, not so much Brees these days, but he's not that accurate. That is an issue. But I don't think the game plan fits what he can do with the ball in his hand. Like, it's the running game's great, and yet double down on that, and you've got a star in the making in J.K. Dobbins. That's awesome. But if all you're doing is running the ball and relying on outside the numbers passes to Marquise Brown, who I think is a good wide receiver, but he's not a dominant wide receiver, to your point, Griff. If that's all you've got, then you're going to get found out pretty quickly. I love Greg Romaine. I think he's an amazing offensive coordinator. But he does have a habit of, like, after a couple of years, he gets found out. Because he did it in San Francisco. Like, we looked amazing with Colin Kaepernick the first couple of years. You know, got to the Super Bowl, got to the championship game. And then after that, it all fell off the cliff. And I'm just worried that unless they have a big shake-up and figure out, all right, we need to do something. We need to play to Lamar's strengths. And we know this isn't a strength of him, he's throwing outside the numbers. So what can we do to build the team around him to make something in the passing game a strength? Just to take the edge off the running game a little bit. Because intelligent defensive coordinators like Leslie Frazier, they'll figure it out. And I think they have figured it out. And I think sometimes it's only the fact that Lamar Jackson is so good that they get out of it. But yeah, I think Marquise Brown was spot on that there needs to be some diversification in that game plan.
Couldn't have worded that better myself, to be honest. Yeah.
They're too quick to revert to what wins them games often rather than shaking it up to beat teams that are in the postseason. There's a reason these teams are in the postseason. They are the best. And they got found out, they did. But here's a point of illustration for the passing. That was his first ever red zone interception. He's thrown 49 red zone touchdowns. That was the first ever interception. Okay, it's not outside the numbers, but still, 49 touchdowns in the red zone without a pick is as good as anybody else's record has ever been. Yeah. So you just got to exploit it better, like you said. This guy he's going to be a brilliant talent, and they eventually will get over the hump with him at some point if they can keep the defense together as well.
That defense was amazing. Like, given what we've seen Buffalo do this year, that defense kept that offense to 10 points because, you know, they got 7 points from the pick six.
Yeah.
If you'd gone into that and asked any Ravens fan, right, your defense is only going to give up 10 points to the Bills, they'd be like, well, we're winning that match.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's about game management, isn't it?
Yeah.
And that's the issue with the Ravens at the moment. You know, they should have been able to score more points. You know, if you only score 3 points, you're not going to win any games.
It doesn't help when the best kicker the NFL's seen in 20 years misses two field goals.
Do you remember the last time he missed two field goals?
Never.
He's never missed two field goals. That's the first time it's ever happened.
Shocking, isn't it?
Yeah.
And they were bad kicks. They weren't like near misses either. Yeah. They were bad. It was an off day for one of the league's best players, but it still wouldn't have made enough of a difference. I'm not sold on Harbaugh. I think he's a good coach, but I'm wondering if, like you were saying with Greg Roman, whether it's become a bit stale and he's stuck in the same old ways. Maybe he needs to look at himself. I'm not saying he should replace him.
Yeah.
I'm saying he just have to look at himself and get some people in to help him.
Yeah, I mean, that's we said it we were talking about last week. I can't remember who we were talking about last week. We said like the head coach's job is to, you know, build around him and build a team around him, a team of coaches who can get the job done. And maybe, yeah, he needs to. I mean, obviously, they have to evaluate all the players going into the off-season, but they need to evaluate the coaches as well. Mm. And that's one thing that, you know, he has to have a conversation with Greg Roman and say, all right, we did well, got some division around again, but then we fluffed it. And it's been a couple of years now where they've not got over the hump. I agree. I don't think it's on Lamar Jackson completely. So they need to look at where it is.
So moving on from the Ravens, let's talk about how great the Bills were. Josh Allen is now 6-0 versus top 10 defences in this season. He has beaten the Rams, the Chargers, San Francisco, Pittsburgh, Indianapolis and Baltimore. That is some record that this guy is building up here.
They're about 11-1, aren't they, as well?
Sorry.
From early on in the season. They've won like 11 in, is it 11-1 or something?
They are on an 8-game, I think they're on an 8-game winning streak coming into this game. I'm sorry, six or more games. They both won six or more coming in. And this has happened 10 times in the NFL history, and the home team is 9-1. So we should have known they were going to win. Everything about the Bills was good because, yes, they didn't put up that many points against a brilliant defence, but their defence was excellent, which hasn't been how it's been all season. The defence has been average and the offence has been what's been driving them forward. To be able to turn it round like this, brilliant. Really, really brilliant.
Yeah, and let's not forget, last week they played the Colts and it was a high-scoring match. And we said defence needs to step up. Otherwise, you know, it's all very well the offence outscoring points, but that's just not going to happen against the Ravens. Defense stepped up this week massively. Like every player on that pitch was just immense. And like you look at kind of Tremaine Edmonds, the linebacker. I loved him coming out of the draft a couple of years back. I was gutted that the 49ers didn't draft him. He was everywhere. He was pretty much solely responsible for the fact that Lamar Jackson didn't get that many yards on the ground. He 34 yards on 9 carries. That was because of him tracking Jackson the whole time. He was just absurdly good on Saturday.
Yeah. I think me and Gary were talking, I think, Sunday about this. And you're like, I think because we both picked the Ravens to win. But I did say to Gary, I said, if the Bills win this game, then they could, I think they might go the whole way. I really do. I think they just seem able to turn it on. Whatever's needed.
Unless they need a run game, in which case they're stuffed because their run game is rubbish.
Well, the run game's rubbish, yeah. But it's been pretty poor all year. And you know, but then you know, we said the same about the Chiefs last year, and they won with two rushing touchdowns in the Super Bowl. So, you know,
I'll tell you what
do we know?
I think the most interesting thing will be, and you know, another spoiler alert, I suppose, but you know, you've got what could be a very, you know, a very regular matchup coming up, you know. Out of those three, you could see, you know, Jackson versus Mahomes, or, you know, Allen versus Mahomes, you know, or Allen versus Jackson in these games for the next 5 years.
Yeah.
And then this year we've got them up against Brady or Rodgers, you know.
Yeah.
So you've got old school versus new school, you know, pocket passer, you know, Rodgers moves around more, but you know, two different styles of quarterback, you know, and it's going to be interesting to see how that generational matchup happens, because it really is in the Super Bowl, no matter who it is, it's going to be the previous generational best versus the best of the new generation. Really interesting next 2 weeks.
The last time the final four quarterbacks in the season, Brady was the worst of the four. Can you think of the last time that was a thing? Because he is comfortably the worst of the four.
2018.
I'm saying in terms of just how they've been this year, he's comfortably the worst. And he's still been brilliant. But it's a great final four.
In the AFC,
it's the old versus the new. Great final.
Yeah. And the AFC is really interesting because the oldest person there is Mayfield.
Yeah.
The oldest quarterback. Yeah, you know, that could be a foursome that could meet every year for the next few years, unless the Indianapolis maybe go and do something, or you know, Bill has a plan.
You're right. I mean,
how shit do you feel if you're Josh Rosen today? You're the only one who hasn't made it this far.
Well, Sam Darnold as well. But we saw it, like we have seen that change in the guard. Like, there's a thing a few years back, wasn't there, where it's like AFC would be represented by Brady, Manning, or Flacco for like the last X amount of years. Okay, let's throw Roethlisberger into that. It's like you've kind of completely seen a change in the top now, and you're right. You've got Mayfield, Mahomes, Jackson, and Allen probably for the next 10, 15 years going up against each other. It's going to be, you know, I hope that those four franchises, A, kind of keep them in place, but also kind of continue to build around them and continue to become that kind of what is going to be a really interesting period of the NFL.
You've got to throw Deshaun Watson into that as well.
Yeah, of course, bloody hell, yeah.
Depends where he is next year. Yeah. But yeah, you know.
Well, he's going to be somewhere.
He's going to be somewhere, but yeah, you know.
And we wonder why the AFC is stronger than the NFC at the moment. We've just given you five good reasons why.
Five quarterbacks that would probably walk into any other team on any other day. Most teams. Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep.
Yeah, no. Anything else to discuss on the Bills?
No.
Just that their fans are awesome.
They are.
Their fans are amazing. So after the game, they set up a charity drive for Lamar Jackson's charity, and I think they've raised something like $219,000 in like 3 days. They've done that before for Andy Dalton.
I really thought
you were going to start talking about people jumping through tables.
I know, they're a bit crazy, but they don't do any harm, I guess. Like, I mean, I'll take the Bills over the Eagles fans.
The Bills mafia are
take
crazy.
Any fans over the Eagles fans. Anyone in the world.
Yeah, true. Probably Millwall fans over the Eagles fans.
Yeah. But, so I remember them doing it for Dalton when he knocked out...
Knocked out the Jets in the final play.
A regular season, which meant that's when the T-Mobile Bills got to the playoffs. They're good. I mean, and generally, they only hurt their own, it seems.
Yeah.
You
were just saying about the AFC Championship game and how dominated it's been. Brady went there 9 times from 2010.
Yeah.
And now he's going again this year. That's phenomenal. I was just adding it up. I thought it was a lot, but I didn't realize it was that many. And then Roethlisberger, Manning, Mahomes, Flacco's got two as well. The only other two since 2010 quarterbacks in the AFC Championship game.
Sanchez.
Mahomes, Brady, Roethlisberger, Manning, and Flacco.
Mark Sanchez. And Blake
Bortles.
And there's one more. Sorry, I meant three. Go on, one more. Sorry, my bad.
Since 2010, he's been good.
This guy was very good.
Boo! I can't think. Oh, gosh, yeah.
Andrew Luck went with the Colts once.
The only other thing I'd say as well, and we're going to come on to this, obviously, but I'm pretty sure is the Chiefs will have home advantage in the AFC Championship game 3 times in a row, and that's the first time it's ever happened in the AFC.
That's the next game. Talk about that.
Well, there you go.
It's a great
We're talking about little bits like that, so I thought I'd just lob in.
Well, gives us a nice...
I have to make a point to Michael, the irony of how deflated I feel after not getting that without being in the Championship game.
all chiming in with Blake Bortles and no one got Andrew Luck. That's a terrible indictment. Yeah. Andrew Luck.
That's deflating.
Yeah.
It's just my influence on the podcast.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we have a nice little segue then into the Chiefs, who beat the Browns 22-17.
Any given Sunday.
Exactly. Yeah.
I got shouted down on our WhatsApp group for a pun as bad as that.
And right inside.
I think Henny might have said it himself, though, in a press conference.
Yeah. You know, you're 35-year-old, you have a chance of playing in the AFC Championship game. why not, you know, spread your own little hashtag out, you know?
And okay, yeah, let's get the Chad Henne love out of the way first. The background for this being that Mahomes was absolutely knocked senseless. Because he didn't seem to actually hit his head or anything, but it was one of those whiplash concussions, I think. And he staggered off like a man who'd been run over.
I think it was either whiplash or maybe the impact of the ball. The ball was quite close to his head.
Possibly. It just looked like one of those ones where your head snaps back rather than actual contact with the head. But still, if Mahomes isn't able to play in the championship game, Chad Henne will play, and then you know what the outcome's going to be. But he did enough good things to get them over the line, because if he hadn't have secured that 13-yard run and then the pass to Hill at the end, Baker gets the ball back with, what, a minute on the clock?
Yep. And 8 points down.
Possible at that point.
He did some great things. There was a couple of beautiful passes, you know.
There's one horrible pass.
But the interception with nobody within about 20 yards is the difference in a championship game.
Yeah.
So all of the nice things he did are completely overshadowed by the fact that he can make decisions like that. And that's what Mahomes will definitely not do.
Well, that's why Chad Henne is a career backup who hadn't started a game since 2014 until the last week of the regular season. Mm. He's one of these people, and it's like Matt Moore last year. Do you remember Matt Moore came in? Everyone laughed because I said, oh, Matt Moore's a good player. He's just a veteran, experienced guy who can just come in and run a very limited version.
Why do I still have to hear about Matt Moore? Like, I don't understand why.
It's the same team.
You do it just to hurt me.
Yeah, a little bit. They replaced one veteran with another veteran, and they may have got the only plays they need out of him this season, hopefully. But Mahomes is still in concussion protocol, and it didn't look like one where you bounce back up and they just take you off to be sure.
He will definitely play.
Yeah.
Because that neurosurgeon will, whether it's a brown envelope, whether it's a set of, you know, Andy Reid takes him out for dinner for forever, like Mahomes plays.
He's already cleared some of the protocols to get back.
He is still in that protocol. But he did jump up and he didn't jump up. He got up and he looked decidedly dodgy. But he did. He then ran to the locker room. He looked pretty good. And then he was tweeting after the match as well, which is not, you know, anyone who's been seriously concussed, you can't look at a light, let alone type something onto your phone to tweet. So, you know, I'm pretty confident he'll play next week. I'd say the Chiefs are pretty confident he'll play next week. Apparently, the Bills are doing their research on Chad Henne and Chiefs, which I think is a bit of a waste of time. But, you know, better to be prepared, I guess.
It's better to be prepared, but it's also not going to be a lot of research, is it? Yeah. You can put the tape and throw in interceptions on and go, yeah, catch these guys.
Press play. 10 minutes later. He's shit. Yeah.
This has happened before with Jeff Hostetler, hasn't it? It's not unthinkable. Jeff Hostetler beat the 49ers.
Yeah, thanks for that.
It's not unthinkable.
Should talk about the rest of the game anyway.
Can we talk about the fact the Chiefs have won 8 games in a row and not won by more than 6 points in any of those games, and that we should be not assuming they're just going to walk to the Super Bowl here?
I think they looked pretty comfortable against the Browns up until that Mahomes injury. Like, I don't think they were ever not in control of that match. I think the injury obviously affected it, because, you know, they gave the ball away. They perhaps weren't as confident with Henne. But even though they weren't scoring lots and lots of points, they never looked out of trouble. I think the defense really, again, really stepped up for the Chiefs. Like, they completely bottled up that running game. Like, Chubb and Hunt couldn't break away at any kind of big yard gains. Like, Chubb's longest run was for 23 yards, Hunt for 10 yards. Never looked like they were in that game, realistically. We kind of said it was going to be, after the first couple of minutes and the first couple of scores, we said that this is going to be a long night for the Browns. And yes, they came back into it because of the injury. They had a chance. They ultimately weren't able to get it. But, you know, I think if you're a Browns fan, you've got to be happy with where this season has gone.
We've got to give you a round of applause for managing to get through any conversation with the phrases Chubb, Hunt and Browns all in the same sentence multiple times. Well done.
Thank you.
Hunt is what Steve's sister does every Saturday night, isn't it?
Yeah. It's one of those times where I just deliberately didn't look at the screen as I was talking because I knew the reactions.
You're a Cleveland fan. You are ecstatic about what's happened because you also know that this team will probably carry on getting better. Kevin Stefanski's come out and said he thinks it'd be great to have Beckham back. I think that's a terrible move if they bring him back. I think Donovan Peoples-Jones has done a great job, and you move Beckham on and bring in people who want to play for the team, not themselves.
I think the area that the Browns have got to look at is their defence, because they've expended so many first-round picks and only probably half of them are doing what they're supposed to be doing. And that defence should not have been... They shouldn't have given up as many points as they did. And even with Henny, the Chiefs were easily moving the ball. You know, it was a bad throw and a bad decision for the interception. But it's not like it was caused by the Browns. You know, Garrett got injured, and he was only coming in to rush the ball. He still made a sack after he was injured. And, you know, I think the issue that the Browns, not an issue, but where they really need to sort themselves out is the defence. Yeah, their offence is fine. They'll average 30 points, I think, the offence. I don't think there's anything more they need to do there. Get rid of OBJ.
15 rush games. Yeah. The offense is ticking. Baker's playing the best football we've seen out of him. He's now being consistent as well, which is the one thing he had left to do. And I couldn't agree more.
Did throw a bad interception though. That was a bad interception he threw as well.
Yeah, but don't worry, we've seen some awful ones. Henny threw a worse one. Lamar threw a worse one. Like, it happens. But he's still playing at a really good level now.
Yeah.
Yeah,
I think get rid of OBJ, then you've got so much money to spend on a playmaker where you need it to be. Because at the moment, they don't need Beckham. Really don't.
Mahomes joined who as the only quarterbacks with a pass touchdown and a rushing touchdown in three straight playoff games? One
Steve Young.
Sorry?
Come on, Kaepernick.
Steve Young, 1990.
I said Steve Young.
I can't hear you over everybody else down at the same time. So only two players have ever done that. So, look, we know that it comes down to Pat Mahomes plays, Chiefs will be favourites. Chad Haney plays, Chiefs are going home. That's just how it's going to be.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. You're right. Just following
the only other thing we haven't talked about is his turf toe.
Oh, yeah,
he did seem to be struggling with that as well. Something tells me there'll be plenty of injuries going in there.
Yeah, but he missed two passes to his left-hand side immediately after, and they both went short. And he definitely didn't look as good where he needed to put more weight on that foot. And he is running. He could still run, but not the same. So I think he's got enough. Just depends on how much it limits him. So
yeah,
we'll wait and see. I think they're still favourites.
There's two more things that I want to raise on this. One is on the back of Gary's stat that, you know, it's Chiefs are playing their third AFC Championship at home. It's also the third season that Mahomes is a starter. So three seasons starting, three AFC Championships at home. And I'm sure you would have seen the stat. There's only one other team that have had three Championship games at home in a row, which was... They're not in the AFC. They're in the NFC.
I assume it's San Francisco.
Cowboys.
Nope. It is the Eagles. Under
Andy Reid.
Andy Reid, yeah.
Yeah.
So,
how that worked out.
Yeah, exactly. But then, like the last thing is going to be the fumble out the end zone and the clear and blatant head to head hit, which should have been ruled a foul. Off you go.
Yeah, you know how I always like to defend these hits. I think you'll find I was the first person to text the group and say, "Well,
actually, to be fair.
No, it was me.
Was it?
It was me.
It was a bad no call. By the
refs. I felt a bit bad that everyone was ignoring my message because I sent it first. Then someone started replying to somebody else's. it was helmet to helmet, clearly.
Yeah, it was helmet to helmet. It doesn't have to be deliberate. No one said in the rules it has to be deliberate. I don't think it was deliberate. I also don't think he had a choice. And I think Daniel Sorensen is the sort of player who would say, "I don't care if I'm getting kicked out of this game, you ain't scoring." And that is exactly what he did. He didn't know the ball was going to go out the end zone and come back to Kansas City. That is a terrible rule.
Yes. It was interesting. I was watching Pro Football Talk, and Chris Sims had a massive row about this, and he didn't think it was a penalty because he said, you've got to be allowed to try and tackle that man. Otherwise, you're saying that from the 3-yard line, you're not allowed to tackle somebody in that way. You're not allowed to dive to make a tackle. And he said, you're trying to make a tackle with your shoulder or your arm, but your head is in front of your shoulder. There is going to be contact from your head. You know, otherwise you're saying that that's a touchdown every time. And he was really, really going mad about it. Literally, like, he was like, if that's the case, I'm not watching football anymore. He was just kicking off.
I see his point. Like,
and all the NFL all missing.
I do see his point. And we've seen other tackles in the playoffs where, you know, players have made contact with their head on the head of another player. And it's not been called, but that was so blatant. Like, it's one of the few times that I didn't see hardly a dissenting voice on Twitter, because everyone agreed it was a head-to-head contact. Everyone agreed that that rule is fucking stupid.
It looked worse because the offensive player was stretching as well. So everybody's coming in at all these weird angles. It looked bad, but if the rule says you cannot make that tackle with your helmet, that is the very definition of making the tackle with your helmet right there. What they do about the rule about the fumble out of the end zone, I don't know. I don't see how that's not been changed before.
It won't get changed. Just like, you know, there's lots of other bad rules, and that one won't get changed.
But what, I don't understand why that rule is there. I don't understand.
No,
why.
I don't.
Because the ball has been in possession and has been fumbled out the back. So the ball has gone dead in the end zone. Yeah, but it's the same as if the ball goes dead in the end zone in any part of play from your possession. It's a touchback, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I get that. But then if that ball had bounced literally centimetres the other way, they were doing first and goal.
And that's right, but that is the rule. The rule is, if the ball goes dead from your possession in the end zone, then it's a touchback, isn't it?
Yeah, and I'm not denying that. I'm just saying it's a bullshit rule. And
yeah.
Well,
my favourite thing about it was that it happened and immediately Derek Carr trended on Twitter.
Yes.
Everyone was like, he's carded.
Yeah. It's like Jim said, it's interesting to note that the Patriots players are told they'll be benched if they extend at the goal line and lose the ball. Or even if they don't lose the ball, just if they extend at the goal line. Because it does make the ball vulnerable. But ultimately, it comes down to no helmet-to-helmet hit, no losing the ball out at the end.
Is that true, or is that one of these Belichickisms?
I don't know. I'm just repeating what I was told.
I know, I've seen that as well. I thought to myself, that just sounds like bullshit when I saw that.
I think
I've seen our players dive for the goal.
I'm sure there's an element of coaching where you kind of coach fundamentals. And if a coach, I'm not saying it's Belichick, I don't know, I forward on someone else's tweet. If there is an A coach that says, hang on, this is a risk, I don't want any of you to do it, they'll train their players not to do it.
I think the only thing I could find that went as an example for that is, you know, the quarterback sneak is something Brady does a lot. Like, he's got the most quarterback sneak touchdowns of anybody currently in the league, obviously because he's been there forever. There are none of him jumping over like Breeze does over the line. He always goes low and burrows underneath. And that would
he
then
can't get that high. His knees are just saying Brady can't jump, man. He's 43. What are you talking about?
Breeze is my point. What I'm getting at is that would support Jim's hypothesis that they are coached not to extend. He always goes low and burrows under the line. And maybe that's the case. Maybe they are told because you might lose the ball.
I think if there's any coach in the NFL that does teach something like that, it's going to be Belichick.
Well, let's move on to his former disciple. as Tampa Bay beat New Orleans 30-20, Buccaneers into the championship game. Looks like it might be the end of Breeze. I mean, in the nicest possible way, I fucking hope so.
I think it should be. Yeah, this was the Manning game, wasn't it? Where he just couldn't get it going downfield.
Oh yes.
I hope he knows that it's time to go. Like, nobody wants to see a player go out like that, but not everybody gets to pull a Peyton Manning or a John Elway and go out winning the Super Bowl. And this is as close as Breeze is ever going to get again.
He's not. It's on a travesty. Level.
He's only won it once, but that's it. You're done. You
know? Yeah.
His arm's gone, isn't it? His arm's gone. You know.
Yeah.
It was gone last year, and you know, I think this year, if you put a Matt Stafford into that Saints team, Yeah. Then you are looking at a Super Bowl potential team. And you've never been able to say Drew Brees with his pass accuracy, his passer rating, has ever been the problem, ever, in his career. Yeah. He's done amazing things. And, you know, I think he's been injured this season as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's just done, isn't it? It's time. I think he knows it. I think he knows it himself. You know, he gave it one last shot after last year. It was quite close. And he saw what he had around him and thought, I'm going to give it one more try. And it hasn't quite worked out.
He had
no shame in it.
No, 3.9 yards average per attempt, which, you know, is criminally low for any quarterback, let alone kind of Drew Brees. And I think, you know, the Tampa Bay defense, just they played it brilliantly because they all just guarded that 10-yard line. So, right, just, you know, we'll allow you to throw within that space. That's fine. You can do that. But we know you're not going to go deep because you can't. And it was only kind of when Jameis Winston came in for that trick play, which was amazing, by the way. It was great to see Winston throwing.
I think I know what Gary's going to jump in and say in a second, but I might just beat him to it. I've definitely been told I struggle to go deep, and it is an issue, and I wouldn't like that to be an issue for someone like Drew Brees. But it's summed up by the fact that they brought Jameis on and he threw a 56-yard bomb touchdown. Yeah. It's incredible.
There were no defenders around that receiver, which is probably a good thing because it was Jameis Winston. But it was a great play. But you wouldn't be able to do that.
LASIK Jameis.
Yeah, you can't do that with Drew Brees, which limits your whole playbook.
This is the unknown quantity. This is the unknown quantity of LASIK Jameis.
let's get wrapped up in that later. But for Brady and the Bucks though. Have they just come together at the right time? They've been so up and down all season. They've been some terrible games. And then at the same time, they seem to be just pulling out of the hat. Bearing in mind, Mike Evans had, 20 yards or something? Brown didn't have a catch.
Well, you know, I think Brown has been a difference because Brown made his debut against the Saints and he got about 18 yards or something.
Yeah.
And Brown's influence on this offense has increased and increased as the season's gone on. And I think that's really helped, you know.
But he had one catch for 10 yards. Mike Evans, one catch for 3 yards. That's what I was getting at. Like, it wasn't them. Chris Godwin, 34 yards. None of them specifically were brilliant. Cameron Brate at the most with 50 yards. But it's the spread. It's
the fact they were there.
Every single player caught a ball. Yeah.
They were all there. That's the point. They're all taking away defenders. They're definitely having more of an influence. And the thing is, I said it, didn't I, that the Saints, when they were up in the first quarter, where they didn't score touchdowns, and you know, the Bucks bent but didn't break, that was it. As soon as I saw two field goals in a row for the Saints at the start, I knew that was game over. You need to get further ahead than that on Brady.
Yeah.
You've got, even with a team like the Chiefs, I think they need to be 10 points ahead. I think the Packers, you know, with Rodgers, they might be okay a score, but they need to try and get two scores ahead of Brady because he's got enough weapons around him for him to do something and manage the clock and read a defense and make a difference. And that's what he's been great at for his entire career, changing things at the line and making the right decision. His decision making is probably the best we've ever seen in the game, as much as I hate him. Yeah. But his decision making at that key point is massive. So you've got to allow yourself a buffer for him to cut into, because he will do in the second half. Once he sees the defense for a half, he'll make his own adjustments, let alone the coaches.
13-13 at halftime, this was over. Because Brady doesn't lose these games. 13-13, and everybody just went, never mind. Bye, Drew. And it's just like watching him in New England. It's a bend, don't break defense. And a talented offense with Gronk and some wide receivers who can run at different levels. That's the thing. Taking all three levels of the defense, it's just like they've replicated it. And then you've got a coach who you know is going to just bomb it down the field. It's brilliant. It's coming together really well.
It's fantasy football, isn't it? You know, if you have the greatest quarterback of our time,
of all time, probably.
Of all time, he's got the rings to prove it. We're not, whether he's the best or not, whether he's the greatest,
I can confidently tell you he's six times better than Philip Rivers.
I think we should go with most successful. I'm not sure we should use the word greatest.
Oh, well, I mean, you know, most successful, whatever you want to describe him. If you want to surround that guy who doesn't seem to age with Antonio Brown, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Gronk, whatever, everyone else, you know, they are effectively, if the Bucks don't win it this year, they lose so many players in free agency this coming year. It's now or never for them. They're surrounded a winner with other winners, and were they going, oh god, yeah, no, it's really great that they're winning.
We should mention Leonard Fournette. Actually, he played really well. 17 attempts, 63 yards, but he was catching as well, and five catches, 44 yards and a touchdown. They basically wrapped him up most of the season. He barely played. What was he averaging, 8 carries a game or something?
He's done under 100 snaps, and he normally did 200 a year in Jacksonville. So, you know, it's amazing that this top 10 pick in the draft, you know, who was a beast, has like done well, you know, when we haven't played him very much, you know. You know, you've got Shady McCoy you don't even bother with. You've got, you know, Ronald Jones, who's starting to look like he might actually have a future in the league as a number one running back. You know, all around, you know, Brady. Like, you know, I'm talking as if they're your team because, you know, you're still a little flag bearer for him, which, you know, you can't get over.
Start of the season. I said I wouldn't watch him.
Of course. You know,
I'm
luckily
Tampa Bay goods. I'm still wearing my Patriots stuff, even when we've been crap. But I'll support Brady.
Luckily, they're going to come up against a Green Bay team that are just better and are more cohesive and are a year ahead of them, and they're going to lose. And then, just so that I can enjoy watching Dunk's face on Zoom, they're then going to lose to the Chiefs.
Oh, I'm glad you got the prediction out of the way.
Derek Harris positive on that.
Anybody name me the last NFL team to have four straight winning seasons with 11 or more wins and not reach a Super Bowl during that time? Because that's what the Saints have just achieved.
I'm hoping it's a Philip Rivers Chargers.
I'm not sure they ever had four straight winning seasons.
Paul. Don't give Rivers that much credit, Paul.
I just wanted to find a way to finally shit on him.
Don't strain yourself too much. No one else has ever done it. It's both brilliant and mediocrity all at the same time, unfortunately.
It's really sad, in a way, because you've had Drew Brees for ever since the Greg Williams team. He's brilliant. He's been waiting for a defence that can keep him in a game. And he finally gets it, and his arm goes. It's, you know, he's waited, 11 years for that team. It's like Marshawn Lattimore this week was brilliant. He really was brilliant. It is a shame that Peyton couldn't get it together for Breeze's sake to have a, because effectively, I was reading a stat earlier. Brady starts as for the last, they averaged out of the last 200 games. Brady starts on a defense which is guaranteed to get, Brady effectively starts 6 points up on Drew Brees every game because the defense is that much better. Drew Brees needs to score 6 more points to get the same result. And, you know, it's just, Brees is brilliant. He just can't do it, though.
We joke about Brady and it's a love-hate thing, isn't it? Where, you know, Patriots fans and now Buccaneers fans love him and the rest of us kind of really hate him. We respect what he's done. I don't think Brees has ever had that. I don't know anyone that hasn't, even now, but especially kind of in his prime, hasn't enjoyed watching Drew Brees play football. He's been immense. He's like a guaranteed first rounder, Hall of Fame player. And what he does off the field and what he's done for New Orleans and the state of Louisiana, watch watch the Americas game for when the Saints didn't win the Super Bowl, and watch the story of how him and Sean Payton really helped kind of revitalize that that city, because he's loved and adored there. And if there's anyone that's going to win like the keys to the freedom of the city, it's going to be Drew Brees. And you know, yes, he's made the odd faux pas recently in the press, but you know, I hope he in some way stays in the game, and we get to kind of enjoy kind of his knowledge either as a commentator or a pundit, rather than him just kind of backing away like Peyton Manning seemingly has.
Well, I think he's hoping to pursue a career in politics, isn't he? I thought that was one of his great loves. So,
well, yeah. I imagine if he wouldn't have been playing in the playoffs, he'd have been in Washington a couple of weeks ago.
Ouch. Just said lots of nice things about him. Are you going to label him at that?
He's a great player. And, you know, the I have watched the America's game. And it is
very religious man.
But, yeah, his opinions are trash.
Yes.
We'll come back in the second half and we'll go over the news and we'll go over the new coaches. Welcome back to part two of the Snap UK Super Divisional Round recap. So we've gone through the games, now let's go through news and start with the Ravens, who have let go Mark Ingram and RG3. Mark Ingram, he had a very quiet year, they've barely used him.
Been a healthy scratch the last 5 weeks.
Yeah. He understands. Apparently, he's been very understanding of it because he knows it's for cap reasons and everything else.
He was a Pro Bowler last year.
Yeah.
And somebody will pick him up. He'll be all right.
Yeah. If teams are still taking Shady McCoy, then Mark Ingram will be fine.
Exactly.
He's still relatively young, isn't he?
What's relatively? Because you mean younger than us?
Younger than me,
yeah,
and I look like dog shit. So.
let's not open the dog door again. Let's not go down that road, right? So, yes, RG3, on the other hand, that might be time, gentlemen, please, because he's been pee poor when he's stepped in for Lamar. He gets injured every time, and there's not many plus things, is there? Like, you can't tell me he's good for this. He's good for that. I think he maybe has coached Lamar a little, but that's not what you want out of a player like RG3. You want him to be able to step in and be productive. And I don't know if they've won a single game where he's had to come in.
Well, if you want a player like RG3 to be in the background, you can go out and get Teddy Bridgewater, probably.
I think he'd be a better backup, to be honest, at this point.
I think he would be as well. There's just like, yeah, I mean, what does he give you if he comes on as a backup quarterback? You're right. You can't exactly say he's been a stellar quarterback back in the day, apart from one season where he was electric. And then he got injured. He's never been the same. And you can pick up a decent rookie quarterback or a retread like John Wolford from the CFL or Alliance of American Football, something like that. And he'll do as good a job as what Robert Griffin III would do. And he'll probably cost less as well. So,
Yeah,
I think you're right. I think it's the end of RG3. Mark Ingram, by the way, is 31. Just to come back on that.
RG3 is only 30.
Yeah.
Then
he's got the body of a 55-year-old.
he's got the legs of a 55-year-old. That's for sure.
I just thought Mark Ingram worth noting because, he was Pro Bowl last year and I think he's got another couple of years left. Anyway, let's go into.
Mark Ingram would be like LeGarrette Blount.
Yeah.
Like, he'll be that. Someone will sign him just for those goal line situations where he can just barge over the line.
Yeah, definitely. So let's go on to the new coaches because they're starting to come through. And first one that came through was Jaguars have signed Urban. Is it Meyer or Mayer?
Meyer.
Urban Meyer. who was last seen as the Ohio State head coach. He's been retired for a couple of years, but he's been brought back to have a go at the pros. Should we go through them all, and then we can sort of work out who we think's, you know, how we think the team's going to do, what they need to sort out in the next over the summer. So the Jets have signed Robert Saleh from the 49ers, as well as the other LaFleur, to be their offensive coordinator from the 49ers. The Chargers have got Brendan Staley from the Rams. So he was the Rams defensive coordinator. The Falcons have got Arthur Smith, who was the Titans offensive coordinator. And there's three teams who haven't signed anyone yet. The Eagles are interviewing Josh McDaniel and Eric Bieniemy. The Lions look like they're going for Dan Campbell, who's the Saints assistant head coach. He's the favourite.
Yeah, I think that's more or less a done deal. I think he was just waiting to do his exit interviews at New Orleans before he then committed. So I wouldn't be surprised if that got announced in the next 24 hours.
And the Texans are being very Texans about it. So they're just seemingly fucking about. They are still interviewing people. And
still requesting interviews.
I think it's come through that they want to get Deshaun Watson more involved in the head coach selection. And you're like, okay. But we can get on to Deshaun Watson when we discuss the Texans. So, Urban Meyer coming into the Jags. Of course, the Jags are all a few down years now. And a year in which they've got the first pick.
Two first round picks. They've signed probably the coach that probably most people wanted to see in the NFL, aside from Nick Saban giving it another go. So Urban Meyer's got he has got a fantastic college record. Let's not beat around the bush there. He won the championship with the Florida Gators twice, 2005, 2010, and once with Ohio State. He has had medical issues in the past. He missed some games I haven't got that in my notes, but I know he had medical issues, so he missed some games. So there is going to be that concern. I think some people were a bit surprised to see him come back into coaching, but I think when a team approaches you who's got the first round pick, they've got the first pick in the draft, and it's a quarterback like Trevor Lawrence, and you've got oodles of cap salary. There's no GM there yet, so one would presume that he'd have his pick of who they bring in as GM. He's got the opportunity to build a fantastic team. He's still relatively young. He's 56. He's not one of these kind of young Sean McVay types, but there's going to be a lot of pressure on him just because of all those things. Like it's his to ruin. We'll wait and see what he's like. But interesting.
He's had a few health issues, hasn't he, the last few years? That was the only, not concern, but point that a few people have brought up is that they hope he's fit and well enough for the strains of the NFL. I know college football's, as pressurized in some cases, but I know that's been raised by a couple of people, just that they hope he's well.
I mean, to be fair, Tom Coughlin was there, and he's like 30 years older than Urban Meyer is now, and he was on the sideline. So,
am I going to be the one that comes on and says then that I think this is an absolutely diabolical hire, because the Jags are a terrible franchise with a terrible front office and, bar one season, a terrible reputation, and they've brought in a guy with no previous experience?
Wow, hang on, no previous experience
in the pro game. Look how many people who don't have backgrounds in the pro game become successful coaches. It's not many. I think this is a ridiculous hire. And
Pete Carroll's terrible,
bit,
isn't he?
Snippet this bit for it. Yeah, but Pete Carroll is the exception, which is why you remember Pete Carroll. Bruce Arians has been a coach in the league for years.
When he came, college coach first.
He wasn't immediately brilliant, and he wasn't immediately a head coach. It's a bad move by the Jags. He'll be gone inside 3 years.
Bill Walsh, horrible coach.
Yeah, but again, it's an exception.
30 years ago as well. 40 years.
I'm not having it. It's a stupid move by a terrible franchise that I'm supposed to get excited about.
He has detractors who are...
like John Deere.
Well... He has, because of course he left Ohio State under a cloud, and his Florida team had discipline issues, apparently. He's famous for his, he has the spread offense, and of course he's now potentially going to get Trevor Lawrence, and
he is going to get Trevor Lawrence.
Yeah. Do you get Trevor Lawrence in to have a run-based offense?
Look, I don't trust Jacksonville to be that intelligent. There's still this part of me that, you know, expects Jacksonville to kind of, they expect us to get Trevor Lawrence. Let's bring in Justin Fields. Let's do something different.
There's just no way that's going to happen.
No, it'll be Trevor Lawrence, yeah. But they should have got an experienced coach to handle a player this good. I think they fouled it up already.
I don't have an opinion one way or another.
I'm John, glad you're on this podcast.
Fair enough.
You don't know that, John. That's John's role. You don't get to sit on the fence. Buzz can't sit on it.
I was gonna mention, to John's point, his there are issues in his history. Like, if you go back and listen, if you listen to any of the Aaron Hernandez documentaries, there was a particular culture at Florida when he was head coach where it doesn't sit nicely with what the NFL is trying to portray. That was a long time ago, right? So I think, like, there's probably a lot that has changed in Urban Meyer's leadership credentials from then until now. You're saying that the front office is terrible in Jacksonville. They haven't got a front office at the moment. Like, Urban Meyer's built two programs at the college level and won championships with both those programs. Why not give it a go? Like, why not say, hang on, we want something different. We're not going to follow the same script that everyone else is following in hiring a young, dynamic 30-something coach who was an assistant or an offensive coordinator for a year, had one good season, and then suddenly got hired by the Packers or whoever else. Like, he's got experience. Okay, it's at the college level, but he's got experience, a ton of experience. So I think he'll be decent. I don't see how he can say he's going to be terrible straight off the bat. Like, he's been successful everywhere he's go. His college record is unbelievably good. So why not give him a go?
But why hasn't he been picked already if he was that good?
He's never wanted it before. This is the first time he's properly come out for an NFL job. People have been trying to hire him, but he's been like, no, I'm staying with Florida, or I'm staying with Ohio.
He's going to wish he'd stuck to that, because he's going to suck. Also, his name is Urban, and no one seems to have brought that up. What kind of name is that?
He's better than Rural Meyer.
Actually, does turn up on a John Deere tractor.
His record in college, by the way, is 187-32.
No one's saying he's not a good college coach. We've seen lots of them.
Yeah, I mean, and lots of them have done well. Like, a lot, you get a lot of coaches from college.
It's what's one of the things about the Jags in the last few years is the atmosphere at the club seems to have sucked, and have bringing in a disciplinarian like Urban Meyer, who might be what they need, or it might be an absolute shit show when he comes in. And, you know, it's fine doing it to college kids who want to get to the next level and go to the pros. It's another thing doing it to the pros who are already there and, you know, anything else. But yeah, I'm more on Paul and Griff's side than I think this might be a bit of a disaster, because it's the Jags as well. It's what the Jags do.
This is what they do. They suck.
Jets.
But hang on. But that has to change at some point. Like, it's changed at the Browns.
I'm unwilling to believe that the Jags and the Browns can be good at the same time.
So I'm going to side with Jim because I think the Jags need someone that's going to dictate a culture. And I'm sure he has changed from, you know, lots of things have changed in the world in 20 years, you know. And you can't do, you know, what you used to be able to, you know, people don't talk to each other the same way they did in management or leadership these days. And I'm sure that has got into elite sport into some way as well. And I don't think that you can use that. The guy clearly knows how to win games of football, and he might have to adjust his playbook, but how he builds a culture and how he creates a winning philosophy clearly works. So if you allow him the time, I think it will bear fruits. You know, it's got to be better than what they've had.
Well, that's the only thing I can say is it's going to be better because it can't be much worse. But well, exactly. They could win no games.
Yeah.
Let's see. But yeah, let's move on to the Jets. Robert Saleh has come in from the 49ers. And it's, I think it's been, you know, I was surprised he didn't get a job last season.
Yeah.
So I think actually it's a nice, good thing to see him getting a chance to lead a team. It's just a shame. And actually, like, the Jets.
I think of all the jobs available, it's one of the better ones.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I was about to say, yeah, if you had to list, we keep saying we should list to the jobs available in terms of desirability, but the Jets has to be one of the top ones of the rate available. You know, they've got a basis.
Rural Meyer, do you like it?
Yeah, you've got your Black Gamber who's in the show, but and they've brought in the other LaFleur to be the offensive coordinator, and of course they're coming in from a winning team, there's basis for there.
The Jets are another one of those teams where, like the Jags, like the Browns were, we always say if there's a 1% chance of them doing the wrong thing, they're going to do it. I absolutely love this. I hate it from a 49ers fan point of view because I love Robert Saleh. I love it from the Jets point of view because he's exactly what that organization needs. The complete opposite of Adam Gase. Like, oh, we're going to bring in this offensive genius guru. Like, Robert Saleh isn't that. He is a man that can lead teams to glory just by the fact of his passion for football. Like, you look at some of the comments coming out of out the 49ers locker room following this hire, and it's like senior players saying, he is absolutely the guy you want to lead that team. And he'll create that winning culture just from the fact that he wants to win. He gets players playing for him. You look at how hard that 49ers defense has played for him over the last couple of years. They've gone from being a terrible unit into one of the best, not through acquisition of the 100-star players, but through the acquisition of that effort level is huge. And that's what he'll demand throughout the whole of the Jets team. It might take a couple of years for them to be good, but I think he'll get there in the end.
I think what they need is progress.
Yeah. Go on, Griff, disagree with me.
I don't entirely disagree. I think he's one of the better coaches that's been hired. I have two concerns. Firstly, he's a defensive-minded coach, so whilst they brought in LaFleur to help, I don't see how this brings the best out of Darnold straight away, and I don't know if they've got time to turn it round with him. So I think the quarterback situation is still murky mm-hmm. the Jets. And the second thing is, with regarding the Jets themselves, the defense has rarely been the problem. Like, he's going to coach up a unit that's already talented, right? They may not have had the best results, but they're already talented. We don't have any idea what he can do with the rest of the team. Yes, it's great to say he's going to bring a winning mentality. How many games have the Niners actually won? They've had one winning season in the last three. So I know that's not all on him. I'm just saying, don't tell me he's bringing this fantastic winning mentality. All coaches go to win. They don't turn up to work and go,
The 49ers defense was a top 10 defense last year. Yes, we didn't have a winning record, but he did his job. And you're never going to get an all-rounder who can do the defense and the offense. Like, he's not there to coach the defense. He's there to coach the team. So he makes that step up.
The biggest change required on this team is offense, not defense.
I think the biggest decision is about what to do at quarterback and what they do in the draft. So they've got to. He's got to sit down with his GM and decide what is the approach.
I guarantee that was done before they hired him. Because there's no way.
And I'm sure that has been done.
Yeah.
But that is what will dictate the future of this Jets team.
So what are they doing?
If they're going to keep Darnold, there must be a plan. It doesn't have to be led by Robert Saleh, but there must be a plan to develop Darnold with people and pieces around him. Or they're going to take a quarterback, aren't they? It's really simple.
And that's what they'll ask in the interviews. Like, right, what's your plan for Darnold? And if it meshes with Joe Douglas, the GM's kind of idea of what he wants to do, then yeah, they've got a good match there. If his plan is, do you know what? I haven't got a plan for Darnold. That's a big kind of question mark about, you know, your coaching ability. So I'm sure he didn't say that. But then if Joe Douglas turns around and said, do you know what? Actually, we're going to get rid of Darnold. Are you good with that? He'll be like, yeah, all right, I'm on that. They have to be on the same page from day one, if not before. And I expect they are. If they aren't, then they're the same old Jets.
There's a pretty elite quarterback somewhere else in the AFC who wants out.
I can't see it being to the Jets. He wants to go somewhere he can win straight away. And that won't be the Jets.
Yeah,
the
only other thing with the Jets, we're fairly sure that the Bills are going to be good for a while now. I mean, that's a tough team. The Dolphins are getting better and better and better. Those two teams look set to dominate the East. The Patriots are sinking, but they've still got the best coach, so they could recover. Are the Jets a bit of a lame duck anyway because of the division they're in?
No, you can just have competitive divisions, you know.
Of course, I'm just asking.
I don't think they're a lame duck. They shouldn't be, but they've just, through years of neglect, allowed themselves to be.
I don't think they're that far away from being a bit closer to Miami.
And Robert Saleh just come out of the most competitive division going.
And Miami aren't totally sure they've found their quarterback yet.
Definitely not.
So I think it's a... We know the Bills look strong for a good few years, and I think the rest of that division is really up for grabs. You know, there's a chance that you'll get a different team come out with the Bills for the next two or three years if their division is strong enough to get two teams into the playoffs. You could have all four teams come out over the next 3 years in different orders.
Yeah. Miami were in the reckoning for playoffs purely on based on a really strong defence. They don't know what they're doing.
And how many games did the Jets lose by less than a score this year? Quite a lot,
yeah. So, on about losing by a score, Chargers. They've hired Brandon Staley, the Rams defensive coordinator, who hopefully can... they've gone from... It is what they do, what teams do, like, you know, Jets have gone from a offensive coordinator who was offensive in both means of the word to a defensive coordinator. Chargers have gone from a more out offensive looking coach to a defensive coordinator. It's for Herbert and all those players, it's the team he's going to build around him that's going to be the help. But I mean, once again, the Chargers, it looks like a good job to take, because it doesn't look like they need that much to get to winning. I mean, they won the last four games of the season.
And you've got Derwin James, which is one of the most important pieces going, coming back into that defense. Good God, what a difference that man will make.
And Joey Bosa, who still looks amazing.
Yeah. Ingram, you know, still a destroyer. You know, there's some great pieces on that team, and for the few, you know, it's a good time to be joining because they've, you know, they've got their, it looks like they've got their quarterback for the future. It's just, you know, what can
well,
do?
We know game management probably cost them at least 3 games last year.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's it. You know, hopefully Staley can fix those issues, because actually the there's not much wrong with the Chargers. Of all the firings, Anthony Lynn was probably the harshest, but it seems to be the one that was made 4 weeks before the end of the season, before he went on a winning streak. Falcons. Arthur Smith's coming from the Titans, where the Titans' offense generally seems to be giving it to the big guy and let him run through the whole team. But of course, they've also have Tannehill. Falcons. There's questions there, isn't there, for what to do next? Because you know, compared to all the other teams, they don't have a young quarterback. They just have a very good one. But defensively, have been an absolute shambles for years.
Looking at what Arthur Smith's done with the Titans, they should keep Matt Ryan. They should build the running game, and they should concentrate as much as possible in the draft on drafting on defense. This is a team that's 3 years away from being any good, but they don't need to waste things on offense. You've got the offense. You've got Matt Ryan, who's still a top 10 quarterback. You've got Julio, who's struggling with injuries a bit, but he's still Julio Jones. You've got Calvin Ridley, who was a top 5 fantasy receiver this year. There are so many pieces that can be improved without wasting draft capital on the offense that you must concentrate on the defense. The problem here is things like salary cap. They've got issues with the cap and what you do long term with Matt Ryan. You don't want to have him on a crap contract where you never know whether he's coming or going. You're either extending the guy and he's there for the next 3 or 4 years, or you're not. And if you're not, you've got to give Arthur Smith a 5-year contract and let him rebuild the whole team, because then it'll be defense and offense.
Yeah. Yeah. Effectively, yeah, that is the question for him in the summer.
I am quite curious as to see, I mean, you mentioned, John, whether they're going to bring in a running back and just run the same system which Arthur Smith had in Tennessee. I want to see, like, if that happens, fine. But I really want to see kind of what offensive system he runs without Derrick Henry. Like, he might be an amazing offensive coordinator, but the fact that you've got Derrick Henry means, like, all right, I'm going to use Derrick Henry a lot, but I'm going to run it. And why wouldn't you? Because he's an amazing player. So I'm curious to see how that changes. I think they'll keep Matt Ryan. When you've got a winning lottery ticket, why do you want to trade it in for a potential winning lottery ticket? Don't see the point myself. So, yeah, I agree that the defense is where it needs the most work. So who he hires as defensive coordinator will be really interesting to watch.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree.
Think all these coordinators that have taken jobs, you've got to look at, yes, lots of coordinators go on to be excellent. The most recent opposite to that is Matt Patricia, who coordinated a brilliant defense for years as a coordinator, and it was an awful head coach. And at least one of these coordinators is going to suck.
Yeah. What you meant to say there, Griff, was the most recent example of that, of coordinators going out and being terrible, is any New England coordinator.
Yeah.
I'd like to raise Pat Shermer into this.
Except Vrabel. Vrabel's done okay.
Yeah, Vrabel's done fine.
He was never a New England coordinator, though.
No, he was just
a Texans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Generally speaking, New England coaching staff don't go well, but Matt Patricia springs to mind. Like, we had historically good defences, and then nothing. The Lions' defense has been shocking.
Yeah.
So it doesn't just translate, because once you give a guy all these responsibilities, you find out what they can really cope with. Arthur Smith, Salah, the fellow from the Rams, whose name has now just jumped out of my head again.
Brandon Staley.
Brandon Staley. One of these guys is going to suck.
I really...
Well, I'm running for the Chargers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just, he's had 1 year. And he's had a good year. Let's not be around the bush. It has been a good year, but he's had 1 year of experience. And I'm wondering.
With Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey.
Yeah, exactly. I'm wondering if it's like, he worked with Sean McVay. He must be good.
Well, yeah. You know, he's had Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, but he's, you know, we mentioned the guys on the Chargers defense.
True.
You know, let's see who we mentioned it last week, or was it the week before, about Pedersen. It's not always about how great you are, it's about the people you surround yourself with. And you know, he had at the time, he had Frank Reich, etc., and you know, got to the Super Bowl. It's who these guys are going to surround themselves with. It's at the moment, Arthur Smith has no one, so let's see what happens when they've got someone. And from the teams that look, you know, promising, and the Jags, to the teams that have been anything but, so we've got Eagles.
Out of the list we've got here, can we just not talk about the Lions? No, I don't care, and I don't really care who goes in there. They're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
The last head coach didn't. The last head coach before that didn't.
Jim Caldwell did okay, and they probably regret getting rid of him, to be fair. The only thing you need to know about the Lions is what are they doing with Matt Stafford?
Yeah.
That's the key thing with the Lions. For the sake of Matt Stafford, I hope he is running out of there. But something tells me he might change his mind if they get the right coach in that he feels can do something. He strikes me as a guy who wants to play, wants to be a one-club man. But you know, you haven't seen him kick up a bit like who we're about to get to. Deshaun Watson effectively saying to the Texans, no thanks. Apparently he's not answering his phone. He's not happy with anything that they're doing. And they've left it too late to try and turn it around, I think. Whether or not they'll get rid of him, because like Gary said earlier, players don't have the power in the NFL like they do in the NBA. James Harden, 2 weeks ago, said, I'm all right. I don't think I'm going to bother playing for the Rocket. Like, I'm not really into it. Then he did a couple of post-game interviews where he basically said, this team's crap and I don't want to play. And he was moved in the most huge trade we've seen in years. It doesn't work like that in the NFL. But it's trending that way.
It is trending that way. And within his contract, he has a no trade clause. So they could turn around and say, right, we're going to trade to the Jets. He's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
Because he's got that clause. He's got that power. And I think the Texans probably should trade him at this point because you can get something which they haven't got, which is draft picks. Like, yeah. You don't want
two first rounders.
Yeah, it's not. He's lost trust with ownership, like, and you're not going to replace the ownership because that just doesn't happen unless someone else buys them. And there's not as many people with a couple of $1 billion to spend on our franchises as there might once was.
Especially the Texans as well.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it comes down to, you know, can they salvage something with the head coach hiring? You know, he wanted Robert Saleh interviewed. They didn't interview Robert Saleh. He wanted Eric Bieniemy interviewed. They weren't going to interview Eric Bieniemy until that story came out. And now it's like, oh, we're going to interview Eric Bieniemy. And it just looks bad now. Like, and I don't think many Texans fans would begrudge him going because they can see that he's just being wasted. Like, so yeah, I think he's more or less gone.
I mean, you know, a poison chalice for whoever comes in, quite frankly.
You mentioned like the two good jobs being on this coaching search. That's a horrible job. And for the very reason that I think the coaches don't want to go there. I think they're starting to struggle. And
a new coach will want to know that this is resolved before they go in. No coach is going to want to come in and be the guy that got rid of Deshaun Watson. Yeah. So Jack Easterby and...
Oh, that's another guy that needs to go.
Who's
Nick Caserio? Nick Caserio is the new GM. And I mean, there's
those not... two have to take responsibility for this now. Because no coach...
Not Nick Caserio. He's only just come in.
He just got there.
But that's his job, is to say to the organisation, we have to sort this so I can get the coaching.
Yeah.
But mainly Jack Easterby needs to take this on the chin and be the guy. Because he's the guy that's caused all the problems.
Yep, seemingly.
If you get two first-round picks for an unhappy Deshaun Watson, that puts this franchise back into a place where it can contend more quickly.
I think you're going to get more than that. I think
it's going to be a whole host. It's going to be a whole package.
Man, it's going to be.
But
Herschel Walker-esque.
Yeah, I was chatting with a few kind of like-minded people, and I put up, you know, two for 49ers, two firsts, two seconds, and someone was like, "It's not enough." You think about some of the players that have gone for two firsts recently, Khalil Mack, Jalen Ramsey, Jamal Adams, they're not quarterbacks. They're not franchise quarterbacks.
But they're also massively unhappy. They're not going to change your franchise by being unhappy. This is Carson Palmer all over again, but more valuable.
Yeah, you're looking at a huge trade, I think.
As the The Athletic were predicting that, and it's.
I think you've either got a, you've got to draft a quarterback and trade the quarterback. So say you're the Jets, you draft a quarterback and trade him plus another pick, you know, or a couple more picks, or you are Miami and you trade Tua and some picks. So I think you've got to give them a solution to that issue plus the so a positive solution, you know, a real opportunity that they might be able to turn that into a franchise quarterback. Plus some extra to make up for the fact that they've made some terrible decisions in the last 2 years. So you've got to give them a solution at quarterback plus something else.
That's why I mentioned the Jets, because the Jets can offer them Darnold.
Yeah.
The other thing to bear in mind is this is the trade of an unhappy player. Like Randy Moss at the Vikings, four-time all first-team All-Pro, five-time Pro Bowler by the time he wanted to leave. They got a first and a seventh. An unhappy player is a variable here.
Yeah, yeah,
but this is big. I think they will want a quarterback, like you say, but don't know. Darnold, is that who would you take, Darnold or Tua? If they're all fighting for
Darnold,
really?
Yeah, I'd probably take Darnold over Tua.
Tua's too much of an unknown. Darnold is a known unknown.
No, that's you talking out of your ass.
No, I'm saying
unknown. He's just proven to be rubbish for 3 years.
Well, yeah,
we know he's not. That's not what he is. But yeah, all you see, the only proof he's got is he's bad.
Well, yeah, the biggest two has proved to be rubbish for 6 months. You know, he's not been great, and he's coming off an injury.
The biggest advantage of Tua is going to be his salary, because like the salary cap in Houston is also terrible. So you're going to have to pay Darnold after a year. You've got another 4 years of Tua on a rookie contract.
Yeah. And on about, we mentioned both bad cap situations and former Patriots coordinators, Eagles. They are interviewing Josh McDaniel and Eric Bieniemy. It's a whole quarterback situation there, but they are so over the cap. But I mean, they also have a lot of people hitting free agency this year. But I mean, of the three coaching positions available, it's the better one, but not by much.
No, not by much at all.
Anyway,
you'd want it sorted out before you went in, really. You'd want to know, this is what we're doing.
Well, I think they do know.
I think they do, yeah. Yeah, they got rid of Pedersen. Yeah. You know,
tells you the direction they're going in.
Yeah. Anyway, we can do a whole raft of things.
A whole off-season. Talk about the off-season.
To go into that when we know more. But before we sign off, predictions. So, Buccaneers, Packers. Who wants to go first?
Packers.
Packers.
I'm going Packers. Anyone going Bucks?
Me.
Griff.
I think I'm taking the Packers. This is the harder of the two games for me. I think I'm taking the Packers. Because I think I think Aaron Rodgers is the difference.
I'm going Packers, and it's easier of the two games. Bills, Chiefs,
if Mahomes plays.
Yeah, that's the thing. I don't know how you call this one. So, with the caveat that if Mahomes plays, I'll take the Chiefs. If he doesn't play, I'll take the Bills. Because I don't know how else you can call this one.
So I'll confirm it at about 8 o'clock on Sunday.
Well, that's too much fence sitting for me. So, no, that's fine. I'm going to the Bills, whether Mahomes plays or not.
Oh, really?
I'm going big on the Bills.
I want the Bills, but I feel the Chiefs will do it.
Yeah, I'm with Paul on that one.
And so am I. But...
Yeah, I'm quite happy to see the Chiefs win again, actually.
Yeah, I also win.
I'm not sure the Bills are there yet. So I'd love to see a Chiefs-Packers final.
Yeah, I'd like Brady to have to play an AFC East team.
That would be the more enjoyable game to watch, I think. Packers, Chiefs.
That'd be a great game.
I don't actually think there is a bad game combination that you can get out of this. To be fair.
The Bills don't always provide great games.
No, I mean, that game against the Ravens wasn't exactly brilliant to watch.
No.
And it was on late our time, so didn't make it any easier.
But, well... We'll see. We'll come back next week and discuss who's making the Super Bowl. So it's until then, we'll see you soon. A goodbye from us. And yeah, enjoy this Super Conference Championship weekend.